Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
So they give me a key, and it doesn't let me into the station, to the Le Show Dome. I can't get into my own Le Show Dome. It's interesting. It's a feeling of welcome. It's a warm, warm, welcoming feeling 24 years into the deal. Ladies and gentlemen, Australian government experts say the word drought is making farmers feel bad. They want people to use the word dryness instead to describe Australia's worst lack of rain in a century. Farmers also needed to accept that drier weather is here to stay, says a report by the government's handpicked drought policy review expert social panel. Words like drought have negative connotations for farm families, the report said. So it's just dryness, which I guess you could fix with Head and Shoulders, and then you don't need rain. But if you want to be concerned about more serious things, ladies and gentlemen, the sun is slowly getting warmer as it burns the hydrogen in its core. Yeah, it's burning its own core, that nutty old sun. So in about 5 billion years, the sun will begin evolving into a red giant. Its outer gas shell will swell up, engulfing the Earth by the time it reaches its peak size and brightness 7 billion years from now. Talk about dryness. But before that, in 1.1 billion years, this is according to New Scientist, the sun will grow 11% brighter, raising average Earth temperatures to around 120 degrees. Talk about warming. That will warm the oceans so much, dig this, they will evaporate without boiling. Like a pan of water left on a sunny kitchen counter. No, not quite. Plants and animals will have a very tough time adapting to that hothouse, although some single-celled organisms, such as called archaea, well, close, might survive, but only for a while. Once the water vapor is in the atmosphere, ultraviolet light from the sun will split the water molecules, and the hydrogen needed to build living cells will slowly leak into space. Let's save the Earth for that. I say, have fun now. If our descendants or other intelligent life forms want to survive, they'll have to migrate elsewhere. Cleveland, what do you think? So, ladies and gentlemen, it has been a bete noire of mine as I've listened to people talk about the economic meltdown. Well, two things, actually. One, starting last year, last summer, when the wise men kept assuring us that this is not going to go beyond the subprime mortgage area. This is not going to get into the larger economy. And I'm thinking to myself, the whole deal was to take these crappy mortgages, slice and dice them, and repackage them into things called securities, then get the bond rating agencies to call them AAA and sell them to everybody so that the risk was diversified. Scattered, you know. The bank that held the crappy mortgage didn't have to worry about it anymore. It was all diffused and scattered. So when you said, the wise guys, that this couldn't possibly go beyond the subprime mortgage realm, what you were saying is it's not going to work the way it was designed to work. And then, as I say, these credit rating agencies took these securities, so-called because they're secure, and even though they were based on crappy mortgages, rated them AAA. So banks all over the world said, AAA, give me some of that. This week, the heads of the three credit rating agencies testified before Congress, their heads and their underneath their arms, and in a confidential document obtained by the committee they were testifying for, the chief executive of one of the ratings firms, Moody's, said analysts and executives at his firm are continually pitched by bankers, issuers, investors whose views can color judgment. We drink the Kool-Aid, he wrote a year ago in a memo to the board of his company. Unchecked competition on this basis can place the entire financial system at risk. They assigned some of their highest ratings to mortgage-backed securities whose risks were grossly underestimated. While three executives at the hearing acknowledged their firms had badly erred, "We have to earn our credibility back," said the head of Standard & Poor's. "We drank the Kool-Aid," said the head of residential mortgage-backed securities ratings at Standard & Poor's. He developed a new model for better assessing risk and loan performance, but it was not implemented because, he said, profits were running the show. It's the magic of the marketplace. AAA, baby. Now, you may have heard that this week saw the passing of Mr. Blackwell, the man who for so long did the worst dress lists, and about whom there were several long-running features on this broadcast. Yes, there was a Blackwell, Strictly From. But before that, there was a fashion designer, yes, who made a recording of some of the highlights of his fashion shows. So, a bit of that today on Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Whatever happened to women? I've heard this everywhere. Whatever happened to women? That feminine creature beyond compare. First you ask, what is a woman? Well, to use a metaphor, she's a rag, a bone, a hank of hair, and a walking department store. Now, being in the rag business myself, I can speak with some authority. A woman is someone who's always right, and why not? She's in the majority. Now, for the moment, think of Samson. He really came on strong. But after his close shave with Delilah, his strength and his hair were gone. Helen of Troy launched 1,000 ships, which drove those sailors nuts. Joan of Arc had to lead the armies. The generals didn't have the guts. And consider the plight of Columbus. If Isabella hadn't hocked her jewels, why, the world and Chris would still be flat, and we'd live in a flat world of fools. Now, all the way back through history, to Eve from the beginning, women have always held those reins and kept this old world spinning. From Salome to Sadie Thompson, no matter how fashion's designed, there will always be women's skirts for men to hide behind. Whatever happened to women? That female perfumed and curled, well, she's right up front where she's always been, spinning this woman's world.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. More memos from the credit ratings firms that said toxic securities were AAA. In an April 2007 instant message exchange between two analysts at Standard & Poor's, one wrote of a proposed security to be rated, quote, "That deal is ridiculous." The other said, "I know, right, model does not capture half of the risk." First replied, "We should not be rating it." The second wrote, "We rate every deal." One high-ranking executive at Moody's expressed concern about the morality of the company's policies a year ago last month. Quote, "We had blinders on and never questioned the information we were given. These errors make us look either incompetent as credit analysts or like we sold our soul to the devil for revenue or a little bit of both." Other credit raters took a more whimsical tone in describing the risks of mortgage-backed securities. Quote, "Let's hope we're all wealthy and retired by the time this house of cards falters," said a high-ranking official at Standard & Poor's almost 2 years ago. That sentence concluded with a smiley face. See? Feel better? Now, another big surprise. The Pentagon official overseeing the Guantanamo War Crimes Tribunals is being investigated for his conduct. It's a bad apple. It's another bad apple. What's the problem? It's just apples. One of the investigations is a wide-ranging ethics probe into whether he abused his power and improperly influenced the prosecutions of the people at Gitmo. The Internal Air Force investigation into Brigadier General Thomas Hartman was launched only after preliminary inquiry found sufficient grounds to move forward. The Air Force is reviewing allegations that Hartman bullied prosecutors. Who does he think he is, Dick Cheney? Logistics officials and others at Guantanamo, resulting in cases going to trial that were not ready and the prosecution of at least one individual on charges that were unwarranted, as well as charges that he advocated using coerced evidence. Well, I wonder how you would have to coerce. The Air Force is also looking at allegations that Hartman made intentionally misleading statements, both in public and during the Gitmo tribunal proceedings, in an effort to downplay his role in the prosecution effort. Meanwhile, the Department of Defense's Inspector General is investigating following complaints of at least two military officials about Hartman's allegedly abusive and retaliatory behavior toward them. Well, who does he think he is? That office at the military commissions oversees the prosecutors, says the Los Angeles Dog Trainer, which reported this story. The investigations will further undermine the credibility of the tribunals. I wonder how that's possible. No, they're so distinguished. They have such a good track record. They've convicted Osama's driver. Yay, team. Hartman was the legal advisor to the administrator of the tribunals when he was given a newly created position, which the Pentagon calls a promotion. He was responsible for providing legal advice to the war crimes administrator, and he was also responsible for supervising the prosecution. So maybe his position was untenable by design, but he's just a bad apple. He has steadfastly denied any wrongdoing. But Chief Guantanamo Prosecutor Morris Davis, who resigned last year after frequent clashes with Hartman, said that full, fair, open trials were not possible under the system, and it had been deeply politicized under Hartman. He welcomes the investigation because he says the Pentagon has skirted the issue of whether Hartman undermined the tribunal process by overstepping his legal authority and meddling in cases. Davis, in an interview with the probe's investigator, said Hartman grossly exceeded his role as a neutral and independent and impartial legal advisor. At least three other prosecutors quit the tribunals, claiming improper political meddling by Hartman. But, you know, it's just a bad apple, baby. Just another bad apple. Now, the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen, beckons in all its wonderment. The Digital TV Transition Ford is a vehicle sponsored by the FCC in NASCAR competition. Of course, it's to draw attention to the digital transition. And in its initial appearance in a NASCAR race, the car crashed. Not kidding. Wall Street Journal reports David Gilliland, driver of the Ford, hit the wall. Nothing metaphorical about that. He hit the actual wall. He went hard into the wall after contact with another driver. He finished 32nd in the race. I don't know how many cars were in the race. How many cars are in a NASCAR race? How many you got? It's such a disappointing way to end our weekend, he says. I think we could have brought home a top 20 finish for our digital TV transition Ford. The FCC, ladies and gentlemen, spent $350,000 to sponsor the car for three races in hopes of raising awareness about the digital transition. It's also spending $1 million for ads in ARP, AARP magazine, to reach the old folks who really don't know what to do. The digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen, hits the wall. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Representative Michelle Bachmann, Republican of Minnesota, has taped a commercial apologizing for her televised comments on Chris Matthews' Hardball, in which she called Barack Obama anti-American. Polling, both public and internal, shows Bachman rapidly losing ground in her re-election bid. Republican National Committee pulled their commercials for her in Minnesota. So she's apologizing. After having blamed Chris Matthews. Well, that, you know, it's worth trying. 6,000 graduates of Framingham State College received an alumni fundraising letter that said, quote, "Today the fact of the matter is that deserving students need help to finance their education. Blah, 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 blah." That's actually what it said. College officials have apologized. The 312-word letter used the word blah 137 times. The apology, quote, "Our decision to send you a letter containing the words blah, blah was a misguided and embarrassing attempt to connect with alumni in a different way," says the vice president of college advancement. "A few of you thought the letter amusing, others were offended, and for that I sincerely apologize. I hope you will forgive our error and continue to be proud of Framingham State College." Mayor Richard Daley of Chicago sought to clarify this week remarks he made about the case of indicted former police commander John Burgee. Asked why he previously had accepted responsibility in a case in which Burgee was alleged to have committed torture, he now says it was not his fault. The mayor sarcastically said, quote, "I apologize to everybody. Whatever happened to anybody in the city of Chicago, I apologize." He also apologized for bad newspaper editorials and articles. Then his press secretary issued a statement. "Mayor Daley has on more than one occasion expressed regret for what were clearly horrific acts and a regrettable time in our city's history. His remarks today were by no means aimed at the alleged victims or their families, but merely reflect his frustration that certain key points are routinely lost in the media, namely that Mayor Daley fired Burgee." Daley was state's attorney during the 1980s when Burgee is alleged to have led a police detective crew that tortured confessions out of criminal suspects. Well, send him to Gitmo. That man's got useful experience. A technical problem with a new Virginia Lottery game could have led hundreds of players to believe they won much bigger prizes than they actually did. Virginia Lottery apologized for the error in the new Fast Play Super Sevens game. A software problem on the computer's gaming system caused the misprints. Problem caused misprinted tickets. The misprinted tickets may lead players to believe they may have won a bigger prize than they actually won. The lottery is extremely disappointed about this error. The lottery is disappointed. And is working diligently to determine the proper solution for our loyal players. Nothing sadder than a disappointed lottery, ladies and gentlemen. Joe McCain will withdraw from campaign activities for his brother, John McCain, after calling 911 to angrily complain about traffic. He's apologized for making the call. Candidate's younger brother, trying to win the Billy Carter Award, was returning from a campaign event in Philadelphia around 2 a.m. a week or so ago when he got stuck in traffic on Interstate 495. Police say the call was made about 1:30 in the morning. Frustrated, he called 911 to find out what was going on. The operator asked him to state your emergency. Well, it's not an emergency, but do you know why on one side of the damn broad drawbridge a 95 traffic is stopped for 15 minutes, yet traffic is coming the other way? Joe McCain said. The operator asked him if he was calling 911 to complain about traffic. McCain then uttered the F word and hung up the phone. He told a radio station he thought his cell phone was on mute. Martin? After hanging up with 911, he called the Alexandria police to ask them about the traffic on the bridge and got a similar reaction. "I did not mean to swear at the officers themselves. I absolutely understand their reaction. I feel terrible about having hurt the campaign over this incident. I won't be doing any more campaigning because of that." He's going to write a note of apology to the 911 operator. McCain's spokesman said Joe McCain recognizes his mistake and has apologized. That's Joe the Dumber. There is, ladies and gentlemen, one clear victim so far in the war on terror, Jean-Charles de Menez, a Brazilian who was mistaken by British police for a terrorist because he was running to catch a subway and was shot down in cold blood. The police marksman who shot him dead broke down on the stand as he told how he discovered he had killed an innocent man and choked back tears as he offered his sincere regrets to the victim's family. He was shot, was Menezes, seven times in the head at point-blank range. The officer, identified only as C-12, struggled, but you can call him C, struggled to contain his emotion as he described for an inquest in minute detail how he shot Menezes three times in the head at point-blank range because he was convinced he was a suicide bomber. This was the first time he'd spoken publicly about the shooting. This was an inquest into the event. He had never opened fire before on the subject in 10 years as a firearms officer. I offer my sincere condolences. I really, really respectfully do that. He told the inquest he only found out the next day he'd killed the wrong man. The briefing he'd received before the shooting had been little more than a pen sketch. And Governor Sarah Palin apologized this week for any misunderstanding caused when she referred last week to the patriotic values of the real America and pro-America areas of this great nation. Democrats and critics said she was saying some parts of the country are more patriotic than others. She denies that was her intention. I don't want that misunderstood. If that's the way it came across, I apologize. What she had said was, at a North Carolina rally, we believe that the best of America is in these small towns that we get to visit and in these wonderful little pockets of what I call the real America, being here with all of you hardworking, very patriotic, very pro-America areas of this great nation. Unquote. But she did say great nation. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Let's look, if we may, at a couple of confusing items concerning our friends, the Pakistanis. From the Washington Post, Pakistan plans to arm tens of thousands of anti-Taliban tribal fighters in its western border regions in hopes, shared by the U.S. military, that these nascent militias can replicate the tribal awakening movements that proved decisive in the battle against al-Qaeda in Iraq. The militias called Lashkars, not Ishtars, but Lashkars, will receive Chinese assault rifles and other small arms. So about 30 military trainers were permitted to set up operations providing counterinsurgency instruction to Pakistani army soldiers. We're very encouraged by what we're seeing from the Pakistani military in the tribal regions, says a Pentagon spokesman. On the other hand, there's news from outside the bubble. From the Australian newspaper The Age and the British newspaper The Guardian, Pakistan's parliament has set what could be a collision course with Washington by passing a sweeping resolution calling for dialogue with extremist groups operating in the country and an end to military action. What? The new strategy, backed by all parties, emerged after a fierce debate in Parliament, where most said Pakistan was paying an unacceptable price for fighting America's war. If implemented by the government, support for Pakistan from international allies would come under severe strain, adding further instability. We need to prioritize our own national security interests, says a leading member of the ruling People's Party. As far as the U.S. is concerned, the message that has gone with this resolution will definitely ring alarm bells vis-a-vis their policy of bulldozing Pakistan. How's Pakistan doing? Ordinary people complain the country feels like it's falling apart, with a severe shortage of electricity causing blackouts of 12 hours or more in many areas and crippling food price inflation. It sounds like little Iraq. Past attempts by Pakistan at making peace with militant groups in the tribal area have allowed them to regroup and led to a sharp increase in cross-border attacks into Afghanistan. So, who knows what's happening over there? But meantime, from McClatchy newspapers, the Bush administration will announce in mid-November, after the presidential election, that it intends to establish the first U.S. diplomatic presence in Iran since the hostage crisis almost three decades ago, according to senior Bush administration officials. The proposal for an interest section, which falls short of a full U.S. embassy, has been conveyed in private diplomatic messages to Tehran. We're talking to them. And a search is underway to choose the American diplomat who'd head the post. Pick me. I'm diplomatic. American officials spoke on condition of anonymity because the step hasn't been announced and there's still an election. It's not known how Iran has responded. President Ahmadinejad, or Dinajacket, said last month he'd consider the idea, which first surfaced over the summer. Interesting. But, you know, after the election, when it's cool. And from the British newspaper The Independent, you may remember that one of the facts cited to support the premise that Saddam Hussein was supporting terrorism, hence was connected to 9/11, was the fact that he had given refuge to the one-time terrorist, no, not Bill Ayers, Abu Nidal, who was a Palestinian, clearly a terrorist, but was, by the time he got to Baghdad, to borrow a phrase from John McCain, a washed-up terrorist. Now, reports The Independent, Iraqi secret police believed at that time that Abu Nidal was working for the Americans, as well as Egypt and Kuwait, when they interrogated him only months before the invasion. Hitherto secret documents, now in the hands of The Independent, written by Saddam Hussein's security services for his eyes only, state that Abu Nidal had been colluding with the Americans and, with the help of the Egyptians and Kuwaitis, was trying to find evidence linking Saddam and Al-Qaeda. Isn't that nutty? Isn't that wild? Abu Nidal's final hours are revealed in the set of intelligence reports. Documents say Egypt and Kuwaiti intelligence officers had asked Nidal to spy for them with the knowledge of their American counterparts. It's a wacky little web. There's more news from outside the bubble. Gordon Brown and other European leaders are secretly preparing an unprecedented campaign to spread genetically modified crops and foods on Britain and throughout Europe, according to that same independent newspaper. It's called The Independent. It's not an independent. The documents, minutes of a series of private meetings of representatives of 27 governments, disclose plans to, quote, speed up the introduction of the modified crops and to, quote, deal with, unquote, public resistance to them. They show that leaders want agricultural representatives and industry to be more vocal to counteract the, quote, vested interests of environmentalists. Popular concern about genetically modified technologies increasing in Europe, even in countries that have so far accepted it. Public opposition has prevented any modified crops from being grown in Britain. France, only one of three countries in Europe to have grown them, has suspended their cultivation, and resistance to them is rising rapidly in the other two, Spain and Portugal. The embattled biotech industry has been conducting a public relations campaign based around the assertion that genetic modification is needed to feed the world. The secret meetings were convened by the pro-genetically modified food president of the European Commission, José Manuel Barroso. And the Telegraph reports that until 3 years ago, Kabul, Afghanistan, was an exotic and exciting posting for an ambitious young aid worker or diplomat. Today, after the Taliban resurgence and the growth of banditry, it is starting to look as dangerous as Baghdad at its worst. Aid workers who could wander the city's bazaars at will in 2005 are now banned from leaving their hotels, which look like fortresses with razor wire and Kalashnikov-toting guards at all entrances. The threat is real and many think worsening. Six international aid workers have been killed so far this year in Afghanistan. Two Britons died in the capital this week alone. Like elsewhere in Afghanistan, Kabul is lawless. There have never been so many police on the streets, but as faith in the government has waned, crime has grown. Men who 10 years ago were ragged bandits preying off penniless refugees are now armed robbers who kidnap wealthy Afghan businessmen. And Westerners, too. So let's see. We've turned Pakistan and Afghanistan into Iraq. Mission. Well, you know what we did with that mission. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. We are all Baghdadis now. This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, an iconic, sadly iconic, I guess, moment occurred during the last presidential debate. I was sort of amazed that it escaped attention, media attention, but it didn't escape mine because it certainly just seemed to, I don't know, seemed oddly to sum up the fortunes of the McCain campaign. This is Bob Schieffer asking John McCain a question on the last presidential debate.
Why would the country be better off if your running mate became president rather than his running mate?
Senator.
Well, Americans have gotten to know Sarah Palin. They know that she's a role model to women and other reformers all over America. And it's time we had that breath of fresh air.
A breath of fresh air. That's it. It just sums it right up. A breath of fresh air. I'm seeing T-shirts. I don't know about you. And then on Meet the Press this past morning, McCain was asked whether he felt bad about Colin Powell endorsing Obama. And McCain said, well, yeah, but I'm proud to have the support of five distinguished former secretaries of state, James Baker, Henry Kissinger, Lawrence Eagleburger. And he remembered there were five. He remembered four. I'm remembering three, so, you know, I'm not going to run for president either. Twice he went through the list, and twice he didn't remember George Shultz. And then he, at the end of the question, oh, yes, George Shultz. But that's a breath of fresh air, too. He of course, has patched things up with David Letterman, but he canceled an interview with Larry King Live. And the people at Larry King Live say they're still waiting for him to reschedule. They've also extended an invitation, to Governor Palin. And Joe the Plumber, you've heard of him, of course. He says his famous exchange with Senator Obama has made him scared for America. In an interview with the Washington Times, owned by the Moonies. Owned by... Who knows? He has refused to endorse a candidate for president, has Joe. But he now says he may run for Congress. He doesn't like the Internal Revenue Service. He doesn't like the income tax. He would consider running for Congress, challenging in the Toledo area district, represented by longtime Representative Marcy Kaptur. I'll tell you what, we'd definitely be in one heck of a fight, Joe the Plumber said during an appearance on the Laura Ingraham radio show last Friday. But, you know, I'd be up for it. More about this next on the show.
We're back from Los Angeles. Tomorrow night, incidentally, we'll be in New York City and seeing the 15th annual Angioplasty Foundation Black and Blue Ball. We've been trying to get Senator John McCain on this program basically since the time I wore belts. And he's been on a lot of other programs, a lot of other interviewers. So a lot of our viewers, like me, were wondering, Senator, what's the deal? Today, the Larry King Live office received this telephone message from the senator. Do we have that? We got the what?
Hello, Larry. This is Senator John McCain. I'm calling. I was hoping to speak to you in person, but I'm calling to leave this message, which is why I called the message line directly, that unfortunately I won't be able to come on your program as a guest before the election. I'm going to have to be somewhere else visiting my ailing grandmother. Of course, I'm too old to have a living grandmother, so I may very well be visiting Senator Obama's grandmother or Governor Palin's, for that matter. In any case, Larry, I'll be visiting with someone even older than you or I. But I certainly look forward to visiting with you right after the election, win or lose. And I just hang it up now.
Okay, that's Senator John McCain. We're going to miss him. And our best wishes go out to whoever's grandmother needs him. But now, not in place of Senator McCain, but in his place, we've got a surrogate from his campaign or a supporter, whatever. He's an old friend of this program, the one-time lead singer of the boy band Boys Are Us, now embarking on the second decade of his solo career, the great Dewey Gordon. Dewey, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Mr. King. And by the way, I gave up the opportunity to be with an ailing relative to be with you tonight. Mm. But I'm not a surrogate for Senator McCain. I do support him and Governor Palin, of course. But I'm here, you might say, as my own surrogate.
It's the best kind. Yeah. Dewey, before we get to politics, as you know, the new kids on the block one of the other big boy bands of the 90s, is on a very successful comeback tour. Mm-hmm. Is a Boys R Us reunion in the cards?
Well, Mr. King, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't want to put the leather jacket and the torn blue jeans back on again. I think most of the other guys and boys would, too. But frankly, there are there's some issues that have to be resolved. Clay and Josh are still in rehab. They'd rather stay and do it right this time, so there's a few months there. And then a couple of the other guys, I don't want to mention any names.
Well, just by process of elimination, that would be Bo and Vinny, right?
Well, whoever it would be. There's still some remaining issues involving the previous management.
Those are the, dating back to the band's early days, some molestation charges?
There are some claims and counterclaims about, who overpowered who. Yeah. Frankly, I think my persona is the mean one in the band, kind of just kept me totally out of that particular loop. But in the meantime, Mr. King, I'm just so happy just being Dewey Gordon.
Oh, you got a lot to be happy about. Like what, for instance?
Oh, well, I thought we sent you that release. I'm going into the Laughlin, Nevada company of Hairspray first of the year. We're halfway through the tracks for our next CD, which is tentatively titled Man R Me, kind of a play on the name of the old band.
Yeah.
And then, I've kind of got my hands full with the political thing at the moment. The Dewey Gordon Foundation is, of course, my first love.
Sure.
We're well on our way to our goal of building a refuge, a shelter for Hollywood Republicans, a nice, safe place where they can go and relax and spend an evening or a few days for that matter without being afraid to wear a flag pin or root for victory in Iraq. Joe Pine House, as we're calling it, should be open middle of next year.
Dewey, you've jumped into this political campaign, you could say, with both vocal cords. That's what they wrote here.
It's true, Mr. King. I just got inspired by being able to meet first by word of mouth and on TV. And this week in person, Joe the Plumber, he flew into L.A. to see the first public playing of the video of my newest song because he's in it and it's dedicated to him.
Joe the Plumber.
Yeah. This man has gone from having Senator McCain apologize to him for the media violating his privacy to now talking publicly about maybe running for Congress.
Yeah.
So he's taken some knocks, as has Governor Palin, but Joe has stood tall throughout the whole thing, and I just thought he needed just a little more focus put on him.
Has he paid back his back taxes and gotten the plumber's license?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Heck, Larry, I don't know that much about my taxes.
No, me neither.
But I treat those stories like I treat the stories about your old, connections back in Florida. Just, jealous people who would rather tear down than build up.
Yeah, just for the record, I told you that was a joke. Anyway, the song, Dewey, song is called...
It's called Joe the Plumber.
You stuck with the obvious.
Well, Mr. King, my motto has always been trust the audience enough to see what's right in front of them.
Mm-hmm. First time anywhere.
Except for the viewing party Thursday night at Marie Callender's.
Okay. The cable debut of Joe the Plumber.
If you need to know how much tax you owe,
go ask Joe the Plumber.
If you're wondering how to make your income grow,
go ask Joe the Plumber.
If you got questions about the size of the debt, or how come only banks got the safety net, if your query hasn't been answered yet, you gotta ask Joe the Plumber. Joe, 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 he's the one in the know. Take him all of your gripes, but don't let him work on your pipes. Joe the Plumber looms about as large as a Hummer. Wish I'd known him back last summer. Joe the Plumber. Been stewing over how the climate's doing.
Go ask Joe the Plumber.
If you'd like to stop all those lawyers suing,
go ask Joe the Plumber.
If your TV isn't getting HD, you want to see pay movies for free,
don't call Time Warner or NBC. Just call Joe the Plumber.
Joe. He's the star of the show. Feel free to tap into his brains. Just don't let him work on your drains. Joe the Plumber. If he's in a band, he's the drummer. Makes Obama's day an Obama. Joe the Plumber. If you never knew why the sky is blue,
go ask Joe the Plumber.
Or whatever happened to live crew,
go ask Joe the Plumber.
He's the average Joe, but with common sense. Call him on the phone or lean over his fence. Can you write him off as a business expense? Just ask Joe the Plumber. He's the guy in the very last row. He'll always make you think. Just don't let him near your sink. Joe the Plumber looms about as large as a Hummer. Wish I'd known him back last summer. Joe the Plumber. Just ask Joe the Plumber. Just ask Joe the Plumber. Joe the Plumber.
Dewey, you're rocking out there, kid.
Yeah, well, Mr. King is my manager. Mr. Irvin Afro says you're never too old to grow a pair.
Joe's heard it. What was his reaction?
Joe. Sir, if he goes ahead with his run for Congress and certain formalities are taken care of, he just might be using it as rallies.
More airplay.
I'll take it.
And again, maybe a Boys R Us reunion next summer?
What can I say? I'm relearning my own dance moves.
I know about a million women nearing 40 who just screamed at their televisions.
Well, they should come to my solo show in the meantime.
The great Dewey Gordon. Just kidding about Florida. Friday night, Joe Lieberman and Queen Latifah from Los Angeles. Good night.
Problems like your parents never had. Neighborhood's dangerous. The public schools are bad. At home there are distractions so irresistible. The hours fly by. No work is done. Some Jewish kids still trying, some white kids trying too. Millions of real American kids don't have a clue. Right here on the lot, we got the answer. Product guaranteed and satisfied. We'll be right back. million parents than you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this came as news to me, I don't know about you, from McClatchy newspapers. Fearing political division in his parliament and his country, Iraqi Prime Minister al-Maliki will not sign the just-completed agreement allowing U.S. forces to stay in Iraq. The demise would be a major setback for the Bush administration. No, he will not submit the agreement to the parliament, says the deputy head of the Shiite Islamic Supreme Council of Iraq. For this matter, we need national consensus. Instead, Iraq's political leaders are considering seeking an extension of the UN mandate for the presence of U.S. troops. Russia has assured Iraq it won't veto that. The Iraqi parliament, said the chief of staff of Maliki's party, cannot approve this pact in its current form. Top U.S. military officials have warned of serious consequences if the agreement isn't signed. Iraqis, however, are adamant the accord must be open to further amendments if they're to approve it. So, that's taken care of. Now, this. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has agreed to retest trailers and mobile homes in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, that were found to contain high levels of formaldehyde. But FEMA also stands by its claim that residents' lifestyles and habits can influence formaldehyde levels. That's right, they're blaming the residents. FEMA Administrator David Paulson agreed to the tests in a letter to the governor of Iowa. He emphasized in his letter the government would not likely find results that differed from a finding by a local TV station that formaldehyde levels are high. Typically, formaldehyde levels rise and fall throughout the day, Paulison said in the letter, although he's not apparently an expert in the field of chemical fumes, given the length of time it took his agency to discover the high level of toxic formaldehyde fumes in the trailers in New Orleans. But his letter goes on. Accordingly, it should not be considered unusual that formaldehyde levels will fluctuate in these or any living environments during the day and on a day-to-day basis. Normal family lifestyles and ambient air have a significant impact on formaldehyde levels. Cedar Rapids TV station found high formaldehyde levels in 20 mobile homes. They tested. FEMA responded by questioning the survey's methodology and by attributing high levels of the carcinogen to lifestyles and habits such as cooking, smoking, and storing dry cleaning products. F, ladies and gentlemen, very definitely is for FEMA. And now it's time for Mr. Blackwell to say goodbye.
Another closing, another show. Oh, I tell you, brother, I hate to go. Time really flies when you're having fun. Well, I guess that happens to everyone. We've entertained you with stars and clothes and tried to bring you the show of shows. With tongue-in-cheek, our comedy grew with a Blackwell brand of humor, too. All our guests, how they entertained you, and they did it with a passion. But throughout the songs and laughter, I was true to you in my fashion. The show is over, the stage is bare. It's been an evening beyond compare. And as we turn out that last spotlight, well, not quite. God bless you. Good night.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to find out if Mikey can get me out of the Le Show Dome. That is to say, that's the end of this particular edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over the same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet. 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin on XM and Sirius satellite radio. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it on your computer. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com, available as a free download for members at www.audible.com/LeShow, and available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And it'd be just like Mikey working at the LeShow Dome if you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Oh, and just before you go now, if you're anywhere near the New York City area, and I don't know why you should be because this program isn't heard there, but this coming Saturday night, November 1st, one show only, Songs of the Bushmen live at the 92nd Street Y Tribeca. Be there or be somewhere else. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks. Email address of this broadcast, playlist of the music featured hereon, so much more available at harryshearer.com. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. And yes, I am a jealous man.